Welcome to another episode of the How to Save the World podcast, where we take a deep dive into the academic research and behavioral science of what really gets people to take pro-environmental action and behavior. I'm your host, Katie Patrick. I'm an environmental engineer and a behavior designer based in Silicon Valley, California, and I'm the author of the book, How to Save the World, How to Make Changing the World the Greatest Game We've Ever Played. In today's episode, we are going to take a deep dive into the design theory behind how we would design a climate action dashboard for a city using a behavioral science-informed approach. I'm recording this episode today to take you through the behavioral science theories of action design because I really want to explain and really make it clear the difference between action design and graphic design and climate reporting and climate accounting. If you see a dashboard or some numbers or some colors or some charts or some data visualization, to the untrained eye, it all kind of looks the same. It's climate and environmental information, and it looks like numbers and charts, and it's all kind of meant to mean something and kind of meant to do something. But this type of data design and behavioral design is my deep passion, chestnut expertise that I obsess over trying to master. Like really obsess over it. And even so much that I have a podcast where I interview academic authors on truly trying to master the psychology. So when I get to work designing dashboards and apps and data, I'm doing it from the most informed place possible. So it actually works. Like it works to do what it's intended to do, which is to get people to do stuff. A few months back, I was pondering scheming over how I would get a single city, in particular my city where I live, to really ramp up its reduction in emissions. Where would I start? How would I start designing up the data, designing up the systems, the progress tracking, the goals, the levels, the social comparison? How would I get my head around what this would look like? So I designed up a dashboard called the Climate City Dashboard. I've put it out on social media today. There's a blog post about it. Please do have a look at it while you are listening to this episode. This episode may not really make sense if you don't have the visual of the dashboard to go along with the episode. And this dashboard design is really important because it does things a bit differently to what you'll see in normal sustainability reports and possibly other types of dashboards. Before we jump into dissecting the theory behind the design, I need to go over some bedrock about where we are in the evolution of what we are calling climate action design. And I want you to think of our evolution of sustainability and climate work and the way we report this data and share this data as having been through three phases of evolution. The first phase was climate accounting, or ESG, sustainability accounting. This is the bean counting of emissions. It's a spreadsheet. It's looking at where all the emissions are coming from and doing an accounting of these emissions. That is the core data. 20 years ago, carbon accounting started to pick up as a thing. It wasn't really around that much before then, and then it started to gain traction with corporations and governments trying to figure out how to do it. And the consciousness or the psychology of where everybody was at was really just about trying to get the data, put the data in a spreadsheet so we have the data at all. And then things started moving into the second phase of evolution where this data needed to be designed up. And you can think about that as climate reporting. And you can also think about it as data visualization. How do we then take this spreadsheet and make it look nice so people understand what it means? How do we get this data to tell a story? And then you started to see these sustainability reports, often really beautifully designed by graphic designers and the sustainability team who put it all together in this really nice report with all of the charts and the explanations and showing the change over time. They're almost always in a PDF, and it is a report that comes out once a year or once every 2 years, and you download it and you read it. And it's usually very conservative type of delivery, very formal, almost like a shareholder report. And that report is pretty much a combination of the accounting with a graphic designer to make that accounting look nice and have it kind of tell a story. It's a singular one-off report to communicate the data. And now I want to open your mind to a third evolution of the way we are communicating this data, which is what we're calling climate action design. We have the data. Sure, we can hire a graphic designer to make it look nice, but how are we using this data as a tool, as a mechanism to really poke a hole in somebody psychologically to prick them and have them go, wow, oh, I better do that thing now. I better install that heat pump or put on that solar or write that letter or turn up to that meeting or sign off on that funding. That the data is designed very specifically as a tool to tap into the human motivational core, into the human mind, kind of stick into them and activate them to get them to do something. And the traditional climate or sustainability report is not designed for that. That is not its job. That was not what it is intended to do. And now when we move into an action design framework, the third phase of this evolution or layer, this is all about really deeply understanding human behavioral psychology, how humans work, and how we feed little segments of this data to people in a way that is going to activate them like a bit of popcorn popping and getting them to do something. It is really in the realm of the behavioral sciences and in the art of persuasion. And the way that is going to look when it's designed up specifically in order to get a specific person to do a specific thing, it's going to take a really different form to what you would see in the other types of reports and spreadsheets. This is the new realm of data-driven action design for climate and the planet. And when you think about action design as a craft or as a framework, it's a very different lens to see the data through than if you are looking at it like a sustainability report. On the surface, it might look a bit like a report, it might look like some data viz, but they're actually going to be really different things that are going to be formatted and designed in a really different way. Stepping now into the lens of action behavior design for climate, I've got this lens on and I'm looking at a single city's carbon emissions and thinking, how do I design this data in a way that is going to activate everybody in this city to go and take a specific action? If you're looking at the dashboard design now, it'll be on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. Have a look at it. And what you'll see on the top main navigation bar is a progress bar. It is a progress bar with three different sections: a start, tracking progress now, and then a goal. Whenever I start a project, I start off with one master progress bar that is the God metric, the change we are meant to be tracking to get us to where we need to go. Even if I take it off later sometimes in a design, I always start with this one master progress bar at the beginning. And it is something that I see missing from almost every single environmental or climate campaign I look at. And when I start these behavior mapping workshops where I go through this, I ask people, what are we starting with? What are the metrics that where are we at right now? How are we measuring, tracking our progress towards the goal? And what is the goal? And you know what? It's crazy. This is often a really tricky, difficult, we're confused, we don't really know, maybe we should look it up. Like, if the whole purpose of us being here is trying to change some particular environmental metric, then put it up right up the front, really big. Let's obsess over it. Let's just, with the power of our minds, will this number to move. I mean, that's how we activate these dopamine systems. The dopamine system is a system that hooks itself onto a goal and then it tracks the progress that you make towards the goal, and it drives you. It's about driving you to get somewhere that you are not right now. It's not so much about happiness. People think dopamine is often about happiness and rewards. It's about motivating you to move to another place to get something that you don't already have. So that's the system that we need to be activating by having the start where we are right now, tracking the progress of where we're going, all the way to the goal where we want to be. And you'll see that is right up there, up the top of the main nav bar. The next panel is a feedback loop. This concept of feedback is essential to any change mechanism. All organisms behave in response to feedback loops of data. Right since we were globs in the primordial soup, the one inherent system that drives evolution and all of life is the feedback loop, that we gather data from our environment. That data could be temperature, sunlight, the threat of predators, whether we are safe, whether there's food around, whether there's other people, whether there's opportunities. All of this data feeds back into our system and then we respond in relation to it. It is the primary principle of all primary principles that governs life and behavior. And everything else is an abstraction on top of this one core principle. A common simple example of a feedback loop is a Fitbit on your wrist. You know immediately in real time how many steps you've taken. Another common example is those speeding signs that are real time. Like as you drive past them, they tell you how fast you're going and if you're going too fast. A real time feedback loop tells you what is going on and then you behave in response to it. We need to have these feedback loops set up for climate and for the planet. Everything must branch from the core feedback loop. If it is not branching from the core feedback loop, your project is probably not very effective in a real and tangible way. It might be effective in grabbing attention or telling a great story or getting clicks and views or maybe really getting people to care. But in terms of actually moving the needle on the numbers, if it's not built around this feedback loop of data, it's probably just living in the intellectual and emotional space, not necessarily the real on the ground action that changes the numbers space. And that is called the value action gap. If you're new to the podcast and to my work, the value action gap means that people can really, really care about the planet, really know a lot about the planet, have big environmental values, but they don't necessarily lead to action. There's a gap. And we need to use different tools when we want to get people to take action and if we want to get people to know a lot about stuff or care about stuff. And so the mistake a lot of people make is that they think they need to give people more knowledge and more caring. People don't know enough. They don't care enough. Let's get them to know more and get them to care more. But that's really not the missing link. It's like giving people more of a, like if you've got plenty of potatoes and you get even more potatoes, you don't even really need them. But what you really need is a bit of salt over here and then you'll get everything to move. So make sure all strategies stem from the trunk of the feedback loop. And so how I've designed this up here is just put this one big like red letter. It is the metric tons of CO2 equivalents that the city is putting out. Maybe you can only figure out that number once a year now. Ideally, it would be real time or it would be updated every single day. But if you can only get it once a year, let's just start there. And then a little ticker like the stock market does, whether it's going up or whether it's going down. But let's just put that number out there, get some literacy around what that number is. Figure out ways to get it to be like the Fitbit on the wrist that's updating regularly. It is completely not impossible to get this number to update in almost real time every single day. We can do it with electricity. We can do it with natural gas. We measure it from all of the gasoline that comes out of all of the pumps at gas stations. And they're the biggest three emissions. It can totally be done. It's a technical hop, skip, and a jump away. And we need to be hooked on this number like traders are hooked on the stock market. Get our dopamine systems hooked into this number and constantly analyzing, how do I make this number go down? How do I shift it? So we can start hatching open those ideas and that energy and that momentum in the community. The next panel on it down compares the city where I am, which is the city of Mountain View, our cumulative carbon emissions with the average of the county. This technique is called social norms. I call it social comparison to be a little bit more specific. And the one thing that comes out over and over again in all behavioral sciences is comparing people to each other is enormously motivating. Nobody wants to be worse than average. So putting a comparison to the average is a really good and easy way to do that. And even though it's for a city, it's not for an individual person, we can still be motivated. People who are already climate motivated, there's many, many people who work in this space who are naturally motivated in this space. These are the influencers, the agitators, the mavens who are out in the community doing stuff. I mean, we're all motivated. So we want to know, I want to know where Mountain View sits in respect to the other 20 or so cities there are in Santa Clara County. But in any way you can do it, figure out a way of comparing the target to the average of whatever that is. School campuses, buildings, corporations, small businesses, restaurants, figure out a metric and compare them to each other. And a really funny thing about comparison, you can take a deeper dive in the other episode with Nicole Sintov, where she talks about guilt versus pride in terms of this environmental feedback, meaning does it work better to give people positive feedback showing that they're doing really environmentally friendly and better than other people, or does it work better to tell people they are doing worse, like you're not a very good environmental performer? Her research showed that telling people that they were doing worse, like in the bottom 85 percentile, was really motivating and they got a big change from that. In my experience, testing these type of dashboards without people, it's absolutely true. You show people they are doing worse than average and they really freak out and they're like, what, really? Are you sure? Oh my God. I go, geez, I better do something about that. So that's a really powerful driver to find people that are doing below average and then show how much below average they are doing and then offer them the solution to get them above average. Fun and interesting branch to this is that when you tell people they are doing above average, like they're doing really well, what you can have is no improvement. And in some studies, people can even go backwards a little bit because they're like, oh, I'm so green. Now I can just like sort of take my foot off the brake and be lazy. But one study about this showed that if you give people a smiley face when you tell them that they're doing better than average, then that effect, it's called moral licensing, doesn't kick in. So if you ever want to give people positive environmental feedback, you're letting them know they're doing better than people, make sure you include that smiley face. Make sure you include some extra positive motivation to avoid people actually slipping back. So you'll see I've got a smiley face and a tick on there as well. The next panel I've got down here is just showing a pie chart of the ratios of gasoline emissions to electricity emissions to natural gas. These are the big three when it comes to climate. There are a lot of other smaller types of emissions that cities calculate. And if there's one thing you want to get right with action design, it is avoid cognitive overload. There's a saying, if you confuse, you lose. If you're designing for action rather than scientific accuracy, I mean, these are two different things. If you're designing because you want people to take action, you want to use as few numbers as possible. Ideally, one is the best. This is trying to get the emissions down for a city, so I picked the big three. I would never go more than three. And you really want to think about the difference between scientific accuracy and action design. If you are making a scientific report and the purpose of it is to become enormously scientifically thorough, and that is its only purpose. You can put in all the numbers you like, put in all the charts, put in massive spreadsheets, just go for it. Doesn't matter. But where we get mixed up is that we take this desire for scientific accuracy and thoroughness in the data that, you know, we're really trained as a scientist and engineers, and then try to apply it to persuading people. We're like, oh, we can't just put natural gas, electricity and gasoline there because then we're not putting in like diesel, and then we're not putting in like landfills, and there's a marsh that releases some methane when it gets cold. And it's like, it's just getting in the way. It's okay to just simplify it down, pick a metric that you want to go with, just focus on one or maybe three. I'm bringing this up because it's a big problem. I consult to organizations and they're like, we must use 12 metrics at once. We must have all the metrics. And I'm like, please, it's not going to work. No, you don't need to use 12 metrics to try to motivate Joe Blow down the street to get a heat pump, okay? Just start with one. Get a bit of a hook, get some momentum, and then sort of layer up from there, right? But anyway, I think it's really interesting to know the proportion of the natural gas to the electricity to the gasoline because, I mean, we already kind of know it though, but like it's cars. Most of the emissions are coming from passenger cars, which is why it's really important to move to EVs. Even if you don't like cars and roads, it is the biggest low-hanging fruit right now for reducing emissions. So that is going to help guide people to be like, yeah, we really do need to, you know, get everybody off the cars. The next panel in the dashboard is just simply tracking progress over time. It's just a simple line chart, but you do want to make sure that your units are correct. Like I've got it here as you can toggle between per capita and total, because per capita is going to really be your ultimate metric when you're going to be comparing all of the different cities in a county. All of this design revolves around this primary concept around game design, which is you have all the groups together like football teams in a game. You decide what the game is and then who the teams are. In this case, the game is the county and the football teams are the cities. And then the cities compete against each other to win the game. And you can have varying levels of nesting down from there. Like in a classroom, you can have kids in a classroom, classrooms in a grade, grades in a school, schools in a school districts in a state. I mean, you could go like six or seven layers deep, but to really activate this psychology action design, figure out who the teams are, how the teams are working together, and what the game is. In this case, it's cities all being compared to each other in a county. And so the per capita emissions are going to be the primary metric to compare rather than the total emissions, because then people just say, yeah, but they're really big. You know, they've got more people. We can't compare that way. Now, the next slide is really interesting and important when it comes to motivating action with the city's residents. There are five big things every single household needs to do in order to get a city to zero emissions. This is every single building. One, the combustion engine cars have to go and the electric cars have to be in. Number two, the building has to get off natural gas and become fully electric. Number three, the buildings need storage, energy storage, like a battery. Maybe not every single building, but there's no zero emissions future unless we are storing electricity during the day in batteries somehow. The fourth one, rooftop solar. And we do have a lot of solar already in California, but that big energy peak we have in the mornings when people have breakfast and in the evenings, we need more solar to provide for those morning and evening times. And especially in summer when everybody uses lots of air conditioning. And the fifth one is demand response programs, is getting people signed up to programs that help us use less electricity during the peak evening and at night, and shifting our electricity use over to the day where we have all of this abundant solar power. Now, here's the kicker with this stuff. We have about 30,000 households in Mountain View. Now, tell me this. What percentage of households have all of these things? What percentage of households have EVs? What percentage of households are fully electric and off natural gas, or have batteries, storage, have rooftop solar, or are signed up to demand response programs? This data isn't anywhere. It can be gathered, it can be put together. But if you are working on sustainability on this stuff for your city, you should have this up on the wall. If I was looking after a team of people and their job was to install these systems, these are the five things that have to happen to every single building to get us there to whatever our goals are, 2030, climate zero, whatever. You want to know what that percentage is. What percentage are we at EV? We get it. You know where we get that data from? We get it from the DMV. They have it. You can download it. You can work it out by zip code, what all the different models of cars are. I think they update it once a quarter. We can build an API that does it automatically, make it into a Chrome extension, make it into an app. I can make it happen in a couple of weeks. Fully electric buildings. There's data with PG&E, with the local CCAs. There are kind of local utilities, electricity utilities here. People just don't know off the top of their head. Nobody knows actually what percentage of houses are fully electric. If your job is to do decarbonization and electrification, you should know exactly what that number is. I'm not saying it's not your fault if you don't know what it is, but there should be like an app or a widget or something that is there looking at you, showing you that number every single day. And every time you get another one down, every time you get another house off gas, you're like, boom, boom, boom. Let's make that thing tick every single day. Which houses have batteries? Stop selling it like it's just a financial thing. We need to get our houses storing energy during the day and being very energy efficient during the night. We can see solar panels by just looking at the rooftops. Like you can just look at the roofs and figure it out. There are machine learning algorithms that can do this automatically, but it's probably quicker to just sit there and count it out. We just got to be tracking this stuff. We need to be eyes on the prize, eyes on the ball. Like if I had a sales team and my job was to sell this stuff and my goal was to get to zero emissions, that was the prize. This is what I would have. I would have it massive. It would be take up the entire wall and I'd be like, come on, everybody, come on, figure it out. How do we get to the next one? This is the type of data that we need to get out there for this type of climate action design. It's not a report. It's action design. The next panel I did, which I thought was kind of fun, which is showing a map of the EV chargers compared to the gasoline chargers. I really try to think of things in terms of what is the most salient metric, or what is the most important metric? Perhaps not salient isn't the right word. What is the metric that we truly, really need to change that's going to tell the story the best way? And I think the ratio of petrol pumps, they call it gasoline in America, the ratio of gasoline pumps compared to electric chargers is a really powerful core metric that you would want to assess every city by. If you've got 80% EV chargers out on the streets and only 20% gasoline fuel stations, I mean, that's pretty good. That would be really amazing. But if you're all like, oh, we're so green, you know, look at all this great stuff we're doing, and you've still got loads and loads of petrol stations and gasoline pumps, I mean, are we really making progress if you have that many, if your ratio is that off? So I'd really like to see that ratio and then see all of the cities ranked by this particular ratio. Every time I drive past a gasoline station, don't do it that much in a car because I sold my car, but now I am cycling past them all of the time. And there are a lot of roads in Silicon Valley. I am cycling past them, through them often to take shortcuts. And I'm like, what the fuck? It's like, they're everywhere. They're all over the place in our apparently super progressive city of Mountain View. Not saying it's anyone's fault, but that ratio is an essential thing to get down and to figure out how we actually get rid of these darn things. And they can stay being shells and chevrons or whatever. They just need to sell electricity and snacks and car washes instead of fossil fuels. Easy, right? Moving to the next section is the badges. One thing that's really interesting in behavioral psychology is the distance at which a goal is. Athletes become more motivated, they run faster, and they actually use up more calories when they see a goal as being closer to them. This is why you want to make your progress bars or whatever you're asking people to do seem closer rather than farther away. And the way gamification does this is it breaks it up by these ideas of badges. They're kind of like mile markers along the way. Rather than like, here's this giant 100,000 miles, very difficult thing to do, you'll get a badge when you just get like 5% through. Hey, good job, you made it this far. Kind of like stepping stones along the way. So I have a whole bunch of them there for like, we have EVs in all our parking lots. I mean, EV chargers in all our parking lots. We're at 15% rooftop solar. We're at 10% heat pumps. And so as the cities can see how they compare to each other, which cities have the most badges, and then these become like the little mile markers that we want to get to, because some of this stuff, honestly, like it could be 50 years away or even never, some of these really big zero carbon goals, but 15% rooftop solar, 10% heat pumps, I mean, EV chargers in every single parking lot, I mean, that's completely doable. That's like in the near future, in the next like 18 months, that could happen if we work at it. So that's kind of like the cherry, the mile marker, the stepping stone that's in front of us, essential thing that's used very commonly in gamification design. And what I do is I put like the next one there. So in this example, the city has 4 badges, and then the one that they're just about to get is right in front of them, like the cookies, like right in your face. And it's like, come on, come on. Like you've just got to do a few more of these things before you get there. Moving down to the last slide, which is just an essential concept I really want everybody to really understand, which is dividing things into levels. We do it in karate belts. We have levels. We have levels in video games. We have levels in every single sport. When we're trying to get cities down to zero emissions, we need to put our cities on a level as well. And the reason why you want to do this is because you want to give every single person an achievable goal and then a reward for achieving that goal. The way I've done this here is that I'm assuming that we have to get 100% of our emissions down. So I'm going to divide it into 10. There are 10 levels. So for every 10% that you shave off, you move up a level. And then you can see all the cities laid out. Who's at level 1? Who's at level 2? Who's at level 3? And then the step to get from like level 3 to level 4, or level 5 to level 6 is a small step. It's like an achievable step. So you can rally that kind of energy to get from level 5 to level 6 and get that reward mechanism triggering that dopamine. That intense drive to seek something out, to get something that you don't already have, i.e. the next level, rather than it just feels so far away so you don't work as hard. This is real human behavioral science. If there are 2 people that are running in a straight line of equal running skill, if one person is focusing right in front of them at like 50 meters in front of them, another person is focusing on a faraway mountain, who do you think runs faster? The person with the goal right in front of them. And if you've ever done fundraising on like an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter, you'll see it. When you get towards the end and that progress bar is moving up towards your goal, everybody jumps on board, I don't know why, like at the last 20%, and then you get this big uptick. I read about it in the like Indiegogo notes before I did mine. And then when I did it, I was like, oh, why haven't that many people signed on? And then like a week later, as the progress bar got towards the end, then all these people just like jumped on like right at the end. And this wasn't the deadline at the end when it finishes. This was just like the progress bar being sort of at the 70, 80% mark. It just does something to people and then it motivates people and they want to get that progress bar across the line. So that is why we want to divide everything up to levels and just give people one level at a time. In addition to dividing up the cities into levels, which is telling the city, this is what you need to do to get to level 3. You need 2,000 more EVs. You need 600 more buildings fully electric. These are the exact numbers you have to reach to get to the next level, getting people focused on exactly what they can do. 600 more buildings fully electric, that's something like it's totally achievable. We could go to the school district, to the police, walk around town, go to Safeway. That's something that could probably actually happen in a year or 18 months. Totally achievable goal if we're really, really working at it. Final one, there's another tab that just simply ranks all of the cities from highest emissions to lowest emissions in a leaderboard with the first, second, and third up the top, kind of like an Olympic style of podium thing. And if you don't think cities are competitive, cities are hella competitive. It's crazy. Just because they're not corporations and they don't have shareholders, everybody, the residents, the people who work at the city, the mayors, everybody is competing. And every time you do a leaderboard, final thing to add is you always want to toggle between progress and the net data. Here I've got total emissions for the city. You can toggle by per capita, the most important one, but then you can also toggle by progress because the poorest performing entity on your leaderboard could be the one who's making the most progress. So if you toggle by per capita or the net data, you could have all these like really great performers and then these bad performers and then the bad performers. You're like, oh, they're always down the bottom of the leaderboard. If you can always toggle between the progress they're making, you could have like a completely different result, almost the opposite result, because the poor performers could be working really hard at making progress and the really top performers could just be hovering there making no progress. So in terms of motivating people, the progress way of ranking by the percentage of change they're making every week or month or year might be the best one to use. I hope this has been interesting for you. I really, really love nerding out on this type of design theory and doing up these type of dashboards. It's the perfect intersection for me between my engineering and technical background and the artistic and visual side that I love to do. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest in environmental psychology. If you are interested in actually building one of these dashboards or working with me on a dashboard like this, get in touch, send me a DM on Instagram or LinkedIn. I didn't create this dashboard as a startup or as a business that I plan to start. I just really wanted to just lay the numbers out in front of me the way that I felt like they should be made. But if you want to make it a startup or you think it's something that cities could really use, I'd be happy to chat because it's really very achievable and it would be an amazing tool to help sustainability managers and cities and everybody who's working on this building-based carbon emission stuff. I think it would really, really help at those times when you need to really use data to motivate some person somewhere to take you to the next level. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest in climate action design. Don't forget that you can also follow the podcast on Spotify. You can leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Take a screen grab of this episode and share it on Instagram. And if you see the City Dashboard post on any of my social media, please share it around, especially share it with anybody who works on cities or urban sustainability or buildings. I think these principles are really important for us to get better at this type of design. Thanks again for nerding out with me, and I will see you next week.